Well, joining us for his regular chat, and that's Mr. Ken Bates. Morning, KB.
Morning, Darren.
How are you?
Very well, sun shining.
Yeah, I concur. Sun shining in Leeds at the moment. It's a very nice day, very nice week here up in Yorkshire. Lots to go through. Let's start with Leeds United. And, they are searching for a new manager, but we believe we may be hearing something at some point today, KB.
No, I like your joke before we came on air when you said that the message from the new owner was said that white smoke is rising.
Yeah.
Which suggests that either he's a Catholic, or as you said, maybe he's appointing Adam Pope as the manager.
Well, it could happen. You never know. Stranger things have happened. We all remember Dave Hockaday. I suppose realistically, and on a serious side for Leeds, it's about time. They're sort of behind the eight ball almost, KB, in preparations for next season.
It's the 15th of June.
Yeah. Fixtures are out next week.
When does the season start?
It's August, isn't it? Week before the Premier League. So what, around about the 7th of August, 5th of August, something like that?
Well, that means July. That means 31 days.
Mm.
15 is 46. Look at 7 weeks.
Not really a lot of time, is it?
Well, the manager's got to come in. Hopefully he'll speak English, even if it's a fractured version. He's got to get himself settled in, accommodation, so on and so forth. Find his way around, unless he has a driver, to help him in the first few weeks. Got to get to know all his backroom staff, all of whom are probably on holiday. And he's got to start imposing his way of life, if you like. Meet the new players, get to know their names, introduce his style of training, and his lifestyle as well. It's a big challenge.
Yeah, certainly is, KB.
7 weeks.
Mm. Just no time. You sort of think that, you know, it's going to be a difficult season for whoever's in charge now for Leeds United.
I always believe that if you're going to make a change of manager, either make it a month or so before the end of the season, which gives the new man time to watch his proteges. Why don't you not obviously in danger of relegation or promotion? And get to know the players, and more importantly, the players get to know you as the manager and your coach. And off they go with their holidays, hopefully their family, they come back ready to go. But first 2 months of a manager's reign is a learning curve. This includes the characters of the players, and I'm afraid we all thought Monk was going to get it. But we were right to that degree, except that, of course, he went to Middlesbrough. But again, you see, the difference is, I can remember some time ago reading that some person had been offered a job as manager at a club, asked Alec Ferguson for advice. And he said, check out the chairman, because that's who you'll be working with. And, of course, nobody knows much about the Leeds United chairman at the moment. Whereas Gary Monk has gone to Middlesbrough, whose chairman is Steve Gibson, I've known for many years. Fine man, I admire him. So Monk knows he's got a good boss. Monk knows he's got a good boss before the player find out about their boss. I think he's a sad loss to Leeds and a very successful addition for Monk, for Middlesbrough. I wish him well. And then I hope that when the white smoke dissolves over Ellen Road, we'll be pleasantly surprised with the outcome.
Well, we'll wait and see, KB. Just keeping on the Leeds theme, and former Leeds United, now the mighty Bournemouth's Lewis Cook, is a World Cup winner for England. First World Cup winner for England since Bobby Moore.
Yes, and what is interesting, he gave a very interesting wonderful interview to Peter Joyce in the Times before the game, before the winning the final. And comes over as a very well-balanced individual. And yet another brilliant product of the Academy. And we have to say all credit to Lucy Ward and Neil Redfern for being the people that brought them through. And a little pat on the back for my Susanna, because she was heavily involved in the Academy and spotted Lewis at an early age. In fact, it was 2007, I think, 10 years ago, when he was in the Leeds under-10 team, came down and played in the Nice tournament. And, of course, they disgraced the club. They won the Fair Play Trophy, which was the first for Leeds. They're joking apart, they performed very well. And he and a few of the others showed good promise even then. Let us hope that conveyor belt continues to flow.
Continuing with football, KB, Premier League fixtures out yesterday. Starting to get real for some of the newly promoted clubs, including Huddersfield Town, that they can see exactly where they're going to be. They've got a bit of a tough run in, though. If I just run you through their last four games, KB, they're going to be visiting one of your old clubs, Chelsea, on the 21st of April. Then they host Everton on the 28th. And then in May, they are at Manchester City.
Well, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because you were going to play them all at one time or the other.
Well, exactly, yeah. Four games at the end of the season that are just absolute humdingers, though. But I suppose it all gets real when the fixtures come out.
It does. There's been quite a bit of criticism of the fixtures this year. They reckon that in the winter, through a winter break, there's two games a week without all the bad weather. And the problem is, of course, that the demands of the Premiership are beginning to impose on the Football Association, which is going to be a clash between the two sides. If we're not careful. Here's a suggestion, for example, the FA Cup should be turned into a midweek cup, like the League Cup. That would be a total disgrace. The FA Cup is the oldest, as far as I know, the oldest cup in the world. It's known throughout the world. And to mess about like that is unforgivable. The Premier League should not be too greedy. And see that the big so-called Big Six now pushing for an even split of the new overseas TV contracts. And when the Premiership was being founded, Ron Nosey and Sam Amann fought very hard for the small clubs, even though we were big clubs at the time. And I remember arguing with Mark Edwards once. He wanted to do his own TV deal. He said, well, who are you going to play? And he said, well, what do you mean, who are you going to play? I said, well, if you think I'm coming out of my Chelsea team, I'm going to provide half the entertainment for nothing, you've got to think coming. I said, we'll be sitting in the dressing room. I won't come out and say, get your bank drafts. The greed of the big clubs is stupid, because if they don't allow enough money for the small clubs, you won't have a competition. And at least in England, we have six or seven clubs who would fight with contention. But if you're in Spain or Italy or Germany, same two or three clubs every season. I remember arguing Malcolm Allison a couple of years ago. He'd just come back to England from Portugal, where he'd won the league. I said, well, come on, Malcolm. He said, in your bloody two horse race. He said, that's not fair, Ken. It's three, actually. Three out of 18. The other 15 make up the numbers. So I was thinking about this overnight. Very careful now. When you look at the clubs owned by foreign owners, there's foreign ownership and there's rumours that Newcastle will be another one. and Southampton also possibly, these farmers have no connection or empathy with the communities to get involved in. I mean, look at the mess the Canties have made, or the Blackburn Rovers. And that's one of the problems. The old days when the club was owned by a local businessman, such as the old Jack Walker and the old Blackburn Rovers, Gibbo at Middlesbrough, now becoming few and far between. So the whole foundation on which the league, English football, was built on, tribal rivalries, is disappearing. And it's such a great tragedy, it doesn't die out. Other than for the prawn sandwiches, as Roy Keane lovingly called them.
Well, KB, on to other news, and since the election last week, it's been an interesting week in politics, and Theresa May's minority government hoping to seal a deal with the Democratic Unionist Party, people calling it a coalition of chaos, which is, of course, a strapline that Theresa May was using during her campaign.
Well, she was not afraid about Mr. Corbyn, wasn't she? Not a lot of change there. And what's interesting is the change is I see Mr. Fallon has resigned today, which means he only had to bunk out off of school and the Lord doing his own work so he can attend the House of Commons. He's pathetic, so it's a good job he's gone. Got the resurgence of the Tories in Scotland. They cut baby surgeon down to size. She hadn't had a lot to say since the election because she hasn't got her. She lost all of her power. Well, she's still got 30 odd votes out of 50 odd. That's not 56 out of 50 odd. She hasn't got a seat in Parliament. Alex Salmond, the Scottish leader in Parliament, lost his seat. So has Clegg. Good thing, too. I must admire the Green Party. There's only one member, so she's the leader. So she also stood up and made a speech in the coronation of Burko. But it's a good change there. I think interesting. And I think we should just hold out fire and see what happens in the Tory minority government. I think we might just find that they've got a bit more power than we thought. We might have got rid of a few of the wets as well. So what John Major is rattling on about. He was a great friend of mine, being a Chelsea supporter, used to meet him regularly. But he disappointed me in the closing stages of his career and met in the Blairites. Let's see what happens. I think now that it's next week, isn't it, we're due to start negotiations. All people shouting and bawling for personal local consumption. It's going down the brass tacks. I wish somebody would explain to us what a hard Brexit is and a soft Brexit is. These phrases, which nobody seems to know what mean. I believe that with the help of the Scottish Tories, as well as the DUP, might be had a very strong government and can take on Europe single-handed. And if we walk out without a deal, then let's walk out without a deal. Bit of pussyfooting around. We've got to get rid of the common agricultural policy. We've got to get rid of the economic European Court of Justice. And we've got to take control and take control of our borders. I know, let's say immigration, must have this, must have that. Everybody's a little bit misled that. And one of Theresa May's mistakes was not spelling it out. Doesn't mean no immigration. It means we will see what kind of immigrants we want into our country, which is very good. So So yes, we do want the overseas skilled scientists and doctors and designers. We do want the Romanian gypsies who've turned Hyde Park near Marble Arch into a cesspit. Gun control. That's it. We also want to make sure that judges can't use these silly laws to stop overseas criminals doing what they like. And, for God's sake, in the paper yesterday, giving a former terrorist £250,000 compensation. That makes it a worthwhile occupation. Ridiculous. Now let's have some action. I agree entirely with the government, not saying what they want and what they don't want. I've done, in my business life, I've done loads of negotiations. You don't go in showing your hand before you start. You go and negotiate the best deal you can. That means you have to give some things. It means you get the other side have to give some things. But what they're really worried about, particularly Germany, if the United Kingdom leave, then Germany have to pick up the tab for the failures, such as Greece and Italy. I don't want that. Well, they also have to put up their 2% of national defence, which 22 of the 28 companies haven't done. And Trump's pulling out the climate change deal is because, with few exceptions, all the countries have signed it. They've done nothing about it. They haven't spent the money they said they would. Haven't done this, haven't done that, haven't done the other. All these great talking tanks, usually held in exotic places, highly priced hotels, less food and wine flow. Then they go back and chaos, nothing's happened. Now let United Kingdom, Great Britain and Northern Ireland, become back independent again and just get on with their lives. Maybe we can start drinking British milk and eating British cheese and British yogurt and British fish. Not a bad start. But let's see what's going to happen next week. That's when it's going to get interesting. If you remember, Mr. Cameron talked about a bonfire of the quangos. We'll finish up with more when he finished and when he started. So much for that. And the other thing is, this terrible tax system we have in the UK needs to be simplified. Very simplified. Because if you don't make concessions and exceptions, then that cuts out the opportunity for avoidance and tax planning and this, that, and the other. KISS, keep it simple, stupid. No special concessions, no special credits. And then we don't have pop stars trying to avoid tax with these dodgy film investment schemes. And one other thing, Mrs. May, if you're listening, pensioners should get what they're due, wherever they live in the world. Which idiot civil servant decided that people who live in certain countries around the world have their pensions frozen the day they emigrate or retire? Others don't. I'll give you food for thought. If I lived 500 yards north where I live now, my state pension, which is paid in for 48 years, would be twice what I get. Where's the justice in that? Where's the fairness in that? Come on, Mr. Corbyn. Something you to look into.
KB, we'll catch up again next week.
Thanks very much.